Blog Talk Radio.
If you blink too fast, or even too slow for that matter, you're going to lose 2023. We're at the last weekend of April 2023. It seemed like the first day of 2023 was about a month ago. But then again, it seemed like it was about a year ago. Time is moving by real fast. Welcome to When Black Men Talk. I'm Mark Elliott. Of course, we have Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles come along in a little bit. I want to thank those for giving us an ear around the country and around the world. Can't say thank you enough. And as I've been saying lately, you've been enjoying what we're doing, going back and checking it out. Please share, let your friends, family, mama, daddy know that we get together once a week and we experience some conversations. Last week, the gentleman basically brought forth questions, some very good questions that we kind of put on the table. This week, we're going to do something, go back to our original type of episode format. And something Mr. Charles said, I think it was last week or the week before, acting like an adult. And when he said it, it kind of basically sent a bell off in my head. And I said, we got to do a show on this, man, because in reality, I don't think we're always acting like an adult. Sometimes we're basically handling situations like a child, and no one comes in and tells us that. And I think from time to time, we should always evaluate any particular situation we find ourselves in to see if we're handling it as an adult. Now, sometimes handling things as an adult, I shouldn't say sometimes, I'm going to say every time, you need to step out your feelings, step out of your emotions, and kind of check some things, check some boxes first. And I'm willing to believe that the majority of times, that's not what we're doing, Mr. DeMaurice. That's not what we're doing, man. Want to get you in on this, man, because as an adult, it says fully developed and mature is to be considered handling a situation as an adult, or an adult for that matter. But I think sometimes at times we just kind of load it out the water, assume if we have a certain age or we reach a certain age, we're doing it maturely and we're handling it as an adult. Well, that may not be the case, Mr. DeMaurice. I want to get your response, sir.
I don't know, man. When I saw this question, I was trying to get what you were trying to get at, and I'm glad you explained it, because I read the questions yesterday. I took a drink. I'm like, let me take a drink. Let me understand this question a little bit more. Do the adult thing. And then after the drink, I still didn't understand it, so I'm glad you... But I think for me, man, I don't know if I'll ever be an adult, especially, you know, I look at the older generation, and I think it's true that you never grow up to the older generation, even though, you know, you're still an adult. But I think I have my childish ways at times. You know, of course, you have to do adult things like, you know, the responsible thing and paying bills and you know, keeping yourself up and going to work and all that other stuff. But I tend to, when I'm to myself, man, sometimes I regress. I have to be honest. I regress when I want to do childish things. I want to do things that, you know, get me away from being an adult. And it seems like the more you get away from that, the more fun you have sometimes. I don't know. It's kind of a question that you have to really think about. And I know I had to really kind of think back on, you know, yeah, I am an adult, but I still like to do things that, you know, aren't adult-like, you know, to kind of release and not be as responsible and relax and, you know, kick back a little bit. Do adults watch cartoons or the Little Rascals? I still do those things I did as a kid. So, you know, I think you select your times when you have to do the adult things or what I call responsible things in life as an adult.
Well, I love the fact, man, I was able to get you to ponder, my brother. That right there starts it off well. I'm happy to hear that. No, I'm with you with joining the childish life things. Don't get me wrong. I'm dead with you. Like you said, a Little Rascals, those type of shows and cartoons, man. I mean, from time to time, you would catch me watching SpongeBob. You know, that's it. I'm more or less, and doing those, I mean, some kids stuff, that's fine. I'm more or less driving us to where we're handling certain fragments of our life in adult manner. And I'm going to roll this more so into things that may happen in our relationships, past, current, or maybe our future relationships. Because I think sometimes, as I said earlier, we put our feelings into it, and sometimes our feelings kind of basically guide us, not more or less allowing our maturity to basically handle us in a situation. I don't know if you ever said this in the past in a situation to someone, but I've said this over the times of and being in certain situations to someone, or someone's, I should say, grow up. You know, usually when I say that, you know, the response was like, you know, you grew up, and I don't think they took time to think about it. And I'm saying grow up because at this point, you're not handling it like an adult. You know, you're basically handling it from a standpoint of your emotions like a child, almost like throwing a tantrum because you're upset, you might be angry or whatever. But at that point, I want the situation to be handled like an adult. And sometimes to me, handling something like an adult, it's not a matter of who wins, who loses. It's what two parties can see what's the best for the situation. And sometimes in that situation, it's giving of yourself more so than you might be receiving. But I think we're inclined to always want to receive more than we give. So that's where I say win or loss. But I'm going to go through a couple of things, man, that kind of, to me, would kind of put us in a fragment or the thought process, come what I'm really kind of shooting for. But here again, man, I love that, you know, you had to ponder, you know, you had to do a little sipping. You know, ain't nothing wrong with that, man. Ain't nothing wrong with just sipping on a little Saturday afternoon. Yeah. If you want to use that for the excuse why you sip, go on, my brother. But I learned. I like that. But, you know, basically, here's one thing. Thinking about the words we choose in our actions and how it affects others beyond in the way we respond. So let me say this in a sense. I could say some things to you that either I feel that can hurt your feelings, or I can say some things to you I think that would be better meant for you. And I think a lot of times, just my perception, we go for, let me say some things to basically rock this person's world. Instead of basically saying some things or handle a situation, we could be in an argument, whatever, saying some things that will affect the situation and the person in a positive manner. Now, to me, that's what I would term and use in situation as an adult. Now, I'm sure, you know, we've probably been in disagreements with others, and for some reason, you find yourself talking about one thing, and it trivels and it pivots over to something that has nothing to do with the conversation, because in a sense, at that point, they're trying to avoid what's going on. They may say something that's going to, they really feel that's going to hurt your feelings, and in that way, they're trying to get away from what's going on and trying to move the conversation elsewhere and not really face what's going on or what's happening in the conversation. Now, to me, that's not handling it as an adult. That's something a child would do. If you bring a conversation, let's say a child stealing a cookie out of the kitchen, and you confront the kid about stealing the cookie, and when you say, well, why'd you take it? Well, they'll make up all these reasons that go to other things, but they're not going to basically tell you, you know, I want this cookie because I like the way the cookie tastes. So when I give it to you in that perspective, does it start to clear up just a little bit for you?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I know I found myself in situations where I know I'm being the adult in conversations, and I have to choose my words wisely so not to offend that person or make sure that they get the message very clearly that I'm not trying to offend, that I'm trying to get to a certain point. Now, whether that person really receives it that way is a whole nother bag of, you know, bag of worms or whatever the expression is. But you find yourself in that situation as an adult where you're really trying to explain some things, you're trying to get to a point, and then you realize that for the most part that you're not in the conversation with the person trying to be the adult. They want to get into, which I think is an unadult thing to do, is not being accountable for what they do or what they say or how they feel.
Yeah, that's dead on, bro. That accountability, we're going to play with that a little bit as we go on, too, because that's the word right there that just finds a way to keep resurfacing. And accountability is huge, in my opinion, when it comes to acting like an adult. Huge. It's another fragment of being an adult, in my opinion. You're taking full responsibility for your actions and where you are in life. You know, you're taking full ownership. I own this. And basically taking ownership when things go wrong. It's amazing how when things happen in life, and I saw this a long time ago, no matter what part of life you look at, it could be your personal life, you could look at in a social arena or in the world in general. How many times do you hear people just say, I was wrong?
Uh-huh.
I was wrong. No one take responsibilities. I remember years ago, this just popped in my head. I was in a car accident, and this young lady basically, she had two lanes to her side of direction she was going. I had two lanes the side I was coming from. So I seen her from a distance. She's driving, and she's coming, and we're both getting ready to come up on like a bridge. And she's coming at me, and she's in the left lane. She's in the left lane, which is the opposite lane, right next to me. But she basically comes through the light. She's going real fast, and she starts to lose control. So she comes over to the right lane. Now, when she comes over to the right lane, her and I are just about to pass each other. As she passes me, she sideswipes me. You know, I'm moving now. When I see her coming, I'm moving over to try to get to the left. Cool. And as I try to move to the left, this is how fast she was going. I'm trying to move over kind of fast as well. She sideswiped the whole left side, the driver's side. Well, I should say, yeah, a good portion of the driver's side of my vehicle, to where my vehicle was termed being total lost. Thank God I wasn't hurt, injured. Now, to me, a common person, common sense, common mind would say she's wrong. It's just would be it. Well, going through the process of getting things done, I received a letter from her lawyer 2 weeks ago. I mean, 2 weeks after, a week after, whatever, basically saying, if I would have moved over quicker, the accident wouldn't have happened. So right off the bat, you know, she decided to hire a lawyer, whatever the case may be. But see how her lawyer is deferring the blame? There's no responsibility for her. None. I mean, she's driving like an idiot. Broke all type of traffic laws, whatever. But here again, and this is where, you know, we act sometimes like we don't like lawyers, but that's what lawyers do. They come in, they try to make the waters murky, they try to make you not take any responsibility, they're cast back on the other person or the plaintiff to where, you know, if you did this or you didn't have, that wouldn't happen. So when I say society, that's what I'm trying to say, to where we don't basically take full responsibilities. And it's like basically pushed into you. And they'll tell you, never own this. And I don't totally agree with that, because I think from a personal standpoint, we should take accountability and responsibility for what we do and who we are and what we have and where we are. And that's a part of humbling. And we fight to be humble. So when you bring that to a personal relationship and you're not taking a responsibility, when you know some stuff you did is not correct and you can't say to the other party, you know, guess what? Here's what I'm going to own up to. Here's what I'm going to take the blame. Here's what I was wrong for. How does that breathe? That's a question for you, Mr. DeReese. How does that breathe a full adult relationship?
You realize when a person is not going to take accountability that you're not, they're not in a – they're not being an adult. And it's like you hate to be the bigger adult in that particular situation, because you know you're going to be taking accountability, you know you've got to thought things out. That is a huge part of being an adult, taking accountability, say this is what I you know I have to own up to. And you know, we live in a society where folks are protected, you know, for not taking accountability or passing the buck on somebody else or not taking ownership of what they've done in situations. Our court system is kind of based on that. You know, where can I find a loophole so that I can get my client off so they're not responsible for a lot of stuff? You know, if you're privileged, part of the privileged group, they don't have to take accountability. Think about the lady that just died who accused Emmett Till of whistling at her. 88 years on this earth and was never pushed to take accountability of her actions. You know, this was a teenager, a kid. She had killed because she wanted to get her husband attention, that somebody was whistling at her or somebody was paying attention to her, a black boy. And through that emotion, through that immaturity, you know, she never really kind of owned up to what part she played in this young boy being murdered because of how she felt at that particular time. 88 years, she was able to not go to jail, not be punished, live out her life. But this, you know, 12 or 13-year-old boy was not only killed but punished for how she felt, her immaturity. Even her family, as far as I know, haven't taken responsibility to say, you know, hey, you were wrong. You were wrong for this. She was able to live 88 years while going to jail, being persecuted, not taking accountability of what she did and how she impacted not only that family, that boy and that family, but, you know, how black folks kind of see privileged people in this society. You feed into this behavior, this immature behavior of racism and all this other stuff, and you won't own up to what you've done. It's a microcosm of white privilege in this country. You will not own up to what you do, what you've done to people, not only, you know, Africans in the diaspora, but you what you've done to the First Nations people here. Anywhere you did around the world, it's like immaturity just doesn't cease with, you know, especially privileged people. And so it's kind of ingrained in our society that we don't take accountability. And so if you're looking at it through this lens of society, how immature is that? How immature? You're never going to be an adult. You're never going to be looked upon seriously as an adult. And I look at how people look at this country. It's like, you know, we're fairly young, but we try to do the adult things, but we just don't come off doing it well because we will never take accountability of what we've done to people and why they react to us in a certain way. So we break it down to, you know, individual, being an individual. It's like sometimes we have to be a bigger adult, but it's unfair because you know the person across from you is not going to step up and be the adult and say, you know what, you're right. I was wrong in this, and let's rectify this. Very rarely do you get that response. And when you do, you know you're dealing with an adult. But when you're constantly trying to be the adult in the situation and you're not getting the response you need to kind of resolve the situation, it can be very frustrating that, you know, you're trying to be the adult. You're told to be the adult in situations, but you're not dealing with adults. You're dealing with childish behavior. You're dealing with people who don't want to be accountable for themselves and own up to what they've done so they can resolve issues. And that's why a lot of things in this world, in this society, and between people's relationship never gets resolved because people refuse to be an adult and take accountability.
There it is, Mr. DeReese. There it is, boss. I couldn't have said it any better, man. I like how you went back and what you pulled up and what you used to show and display. Sincerely, how things can really just get warped in a short period of time by not acting like an adult. And that this country, you know, basically sells it. It kind of puts it in the coffee as a creamer. It just does. Own up to nothing. Own up to nothing. Treat everything. And then it gets passed down to where we believe that's the way you should handle things. And we take it into every segment of our lives. And then we stand back and wonder why our life is not working. You haven't took ownership of anything. You haven't been humble. You know, even as a country, man, and I don't want to go too deep with this, but I remember, you know, as you just said about Emmett Till, I remember when 9/11 happened. And I was saying to a few people, they was like, I can't believe. I said, what you can't believe? The roosters just came home to roost. Remember Malcolm X said that a long time ago. The roosters, they came home. And we sit here as Americans can't believe. You can't keep going every else's backyard taking a dump. And not expect that at some point they're going to come in your backyard and take a dump. You can't keep your backyard clean if you're dirtying up their backyard. But, you know, that's that mentality people couldn't understand. So, again, taking accountability, really taking accountability for basically your actions, taking responsibilities, and taking responsibility for where you are in life. Don't blame anyone else, this and that, or this one would have done this or that. When people start talking like that, I kind of tune them out because you're in control. You sit in the driver's seat of what you do with your life and how you handle your life. Now, another way of acting like an adult, I'm going to roll into, this one is a little different, my brother. It was a little different. It kind of looks at things a little different, but it says basically to love hard and responsibly. I want to say that again. It says to love hard and responsibly. And I love this part of it, but here's what makes it real hard to do such. I mean, when we first started doing this show, we talked about this, and I don't think we ever went back and touched base on it, so I want to bring it back up for that reason alone. But we kind of all kind of agreed that one of the best things that can happen to a young male early on in life is get his heart broken. Because something about that point in life when a young man gets his heart broken and he feels, and the way he comes back from that, will set the stage for how he treats that particular pain the rest of his life. And if he didn't receive it early, in a sense, and he kind of goes on, unless it happens in his late 20s or late 30s, it's going to be tough at that point to kind of really come back from it, because now you've kind of been looking at things somewhat with glossy eyes and everything kind of been rolling well. When I say love hard, in a sense, when your heart is broken and you continue to go out and find another love, you have a choice to make. Are you going to fully participate based on the pain you experienced before? Or are you going to kind of basically put a shed around, in a sense, and protect that feeling from not happening again? So it almost makes you, as a young man, deal with it right away. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to be, hopefully live a long life. Am I going to shut down from love and not love hard? Or am I going to responsibly love, basically in a sense to where when it's time for me to love, I'm going to give it everything I have. I'm going to empty out the cupboards. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But at the same time, I'm not going to allow what I experienced before and how I may have experienced before to determine how I move forward and love hard and be responsible. Now, that's tough to do. I'm not acting like that's easy. I'm not, because once your heart is hurting, some people don't deal with heartache to where they leave it there. It kind of basically, it stays and it travels with them. We call that the baggage. Where they go, it goes. Where they sit, it sits. It comes along. Well, some can basically compartmentalize it and just say, you know what? That's a fragment, that's a segment of time. I'm going to leave that there, and I'm going to move forward. So I'm going to get your response to this, man, because, you know, you could take this personally or take it, you know, in the grand scheme of thing. But in reality, acting like an adult is to love hard and be responsible about your love. So when you see that as a particular statement or a part of acting like an adult when it comes to love, your reaction, sir?
I think we talked about this, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention it if I did again, is that I think when you get your heart broken, you realize how valuable your heart and your feelings are, and that you can't just give it to anybody. So I think it makes us as males, when that happens, much more careful on who we give that part of ourselves too. And we want to make sure we give that part of ourselves to a person that is on that same level of maturity or seems to be on that same level of maturity, because we know what we have is very valuable. What we feel is very real. So we don't want to place it in somebody's hands that are very careless with it. And I think that's the unique thing about getting your heart broken early. You realize that, okay, I don't want to feel this way again. What can I do to safeguard it to make sure that this doesn't happen again? And I never forget my mom. A lot of people would think my dad would give me this advice, but it wasn't my dad, it was my mom. It was when I was very young. She saw that I was very interested in young ladies and wanting to befriend them and, you know, have girlfriends and all that other stuff. And she said, you know, Don, shop around. Just, you know, make sure you date a lot of girls. And, you know, just don't settle for one. Just like the song, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, let it shop around. And you would think that was advice coming from a male or my dad. No, it was, and my dad did it in another way. But my mom was just very, you know, upfront with it. Like, you know, you don't want to, you want to make sure you have the right one. So shop around, date as many girls as possible. And then when you find one that you're compatible with, that's on the same page as you are, then you move forward. So, it's one of those things where, you know, you really have to be careful. And I think, you know, especially when you get older on this journey, you really realize how much at stake that, you know, that is, your feelings, your heart, your trust. Being an adult is being able to to trust people and to be trustworthy. Also, there's a lot of responsibilities to become an adult. And so sometimes people kind of carry the mantle like they are adults and they're a certain, you know, height and weight to be an adult and all that other stuff. But the mentality of being an adult is very, very hard. It's very, very hard to sometimes see that in other people. And it's very, very hard if you're trying to match your adulthood with somebody else. And I'm sorry if I'm getting off the point. But it's one of those things where I know we talked about before how, you know, how to be equally yoked with somebody. And I think that's part of being an adult and being responsible and being in relationships with people that are going to reciprocate that kind of adulthood or maturity that you're looking for in a relationship. And I remember saying this before too. I know I got some pushback on it. I'd been in relationships in the past where I felt I was being the much more mature adult in the relationship, and then my counterpart wasn't, and they were kind of doing things to unravel the relationship. And one of the things that I found out later in those relationships is where they would come back and say, I remember one of my exes came back and we were having coffee one day, and she was like, you know, I wasn't mature enough to handle the relationship. And it was kind of a relief to me to hear that, because all along I was thinking that, you know, maybe I was giving too much. Maybe I was, you know, giving too much of myself and not being a protector of my heart and all this other stuff. And maybe she just didn't like me the way I liked her or whatever. And it was just interesting that she came back. It's like, you know, I have to admit something. I wasn't ready for all this stuff. I wasn't at that level of maturity at that particular point in my life. And I don't know if she was saying at that particular time that I'm at that level now, so let's try again, but I wasn't going there. And this wasn't the first time that an ex came back to me. It's like, you know, I wasn't ready. And I think it did go back to what we discussed, you know, maybe years ago about how boys are or males are very careful when they're choosing a mate, because they had that heartbreak before, they've kind of gone through that. And some women who are doing the rejecting have never gone through that. They kind of push the button first and say, you know, I'm out first. And they never go through that heartbreak in a way that would help them be a better person afterwards, or work out some things very earlier in their life to say, okay, that every relationship that I enter in isn't probably the home run I'm looking for. But I have things to hold back to make sure I give it to the right person. Sorry if I got off the point, but it kind of threw me on that tangent, bro.
No, bro, we like tangents here, but don't apologize for that, man. We love tangents here. Do not apologize. Actually, you gave me something to kind of ponder in myself and probably bring to an episode, and it's the male rejection when you talked about that, because men have over the years, and it even goes back to, you know, getting our heart broken early, we have learned to deal with rejection. You have to learn with it. And I find it funny now, and when I say funny, I mean in a comical sense, where you have women now basically saying, these men, they don't want that. And no, they're dealing with the rejection. And
yeah.
Because we have gotten our heart broken earlier, we're not quick to run after you. Because, no, we're waiting for the good one to show up before we commit and put ourselves in love for our responsibility. We're waiting for that. So you walk around with your blouse unbuckled or whatever, unbuttoned, whatever the case may be. You walk around high heels. That don't do it for us anymore. Because realize
right.
that at the end of the day, if we're going to love you hard and responsibly, we have to know what your makeup is. Not what you put on your face, your character, who you are. And that's why, point blank, there's a lot of single women out here today that haven't invested in themselves, haven't made themselves up properly, and can't find someone. And those are ones over might have been over the years talking about there's no good man. No, they won't check the mirror and see if you're a good woman. And a good woman is not basically getting up working. Absolutely. A good woman is not necessarily getting up in the morning working from 9 to 5, and you bring your own money and call yourself a boss bitch. That doesn't make you a good woman. And if you don't know, find someone, ask someone, hell, call the show and we'll tell you. But reality, like you said, based on we getting our heart broken, we've been able to say, you know what, I'm going to be selective the next time I put myself in that arena. I'm going to think twice about it. And maybe I'll play with you if I don't feel that way with you, but I'm not going to love you openly that way until I determine I should. And there it is, man. So no, what you said made a lot of sense. Do not apologize for it at all. Here's another part of basically acting like an adult. And this here, man, again, as society basically has informed us, you know, we've taken the role from society, we've brought in, woven it into our minds, our lives, and we use it, is telling the truth. It's an old-fashioned thing. Think about that for a second. When the last time you ever heard that phrase, man? And is there value in the truth? Think about it, bros. Is there value in the truth? Because part of being an adult is telling the truth. No, not telling a version that you want people to believe, see, understand, whatever the case may be. But even if you screw it up, tell the truth and own it, and let them decide what they want to do with it. And, you know, I know in life, in the general scope of life and in relationships, telling the truth doesn't have the value that it should, my brother. It just doesn't. You know, as soon as we start meeting each other, we're lying to each other. Let's keep it real. We're lying. The lying starts from the first point. You know, I've been in situations, man, over the years to where, you know, I meet, and I was like, okay, what are we doing? You know what you mean? No, what are we doing? Because I haven't decided that yet. Well, I'll decide for you. Because my point is, it shouldn't take that long. Well, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. What are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just tell the truth. Let's not play the game and lie about this and blah, blah, blah. Got to find that out later. Mm-mm. Here's what I'm saying. Here's what I'm doing. What are you doing? And that's the thing to me. If you're telling the truth, you know, I think telling the truth cuts down on a lot of drama. I think it cuts down a lot of hurt. It cuts down a lot of misleading. Because if you know the truth and you go with the truth, you can't come back and do one of those three things. They're not acceptable. They will not be embraced. Yeah, I think in terms of life in general, here again, it's been sold to us. Yeah, that may be true, but why are you saying it? Why are you saying it? And to me, the truth should always be up front. And so, again, part of being an adult, acting like an adult. And it's funny how we rolling through this, how we realize more and more, bro, we're not acting on many occasions like an adult. What you are basically led to believe and you're looked upon, after you turn 18, in some places 21, you are treated based on being an adult. Your actions are responded to as you're an adult. So if you find, to me, if you find yourself beyond the age of 18, 21, you find yourself in your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, whatever, 30s, and you're not lined up with this, are you acting like an adult? Are you? So it's more than just watching cartoons. Now, I get that, bro. I'm all with that, but it's how we handle ourselves in a daily fashion. That's when I took that from Mr. Charles and I really started going through it, I said, man, this is much deeper than it appears on the surface. But I want to get your response about telling the truth, the value, because to me, man, honesty, a lot of times it can't be accepted. It's not wanted. it's not value. Because a lot of times, let's be honest, man, people want you to tell them what they want to hear. What they want to hear. They don't want the truth. They want what they want to hear. Then, you basically tell them what they want to hear, and then when they realize you're lying to them, why are you, and then you tell them the truth, It's truth is takes on a world of its own. But your response, sir?
Yeah, telling the truth is very valuable, and it saves you a lot of time and money. I'm going to take it from a bigger lens of this. Think about the company. Think about a company in this country, a media company, who backed lying,
yes,
and it cost them almost $1 billion for lying.
Yes, sir.
And everybody lined up against them. I mean, everybody lined up saying we're gonna stick to this. We're gonna cost you $1 billion. Cost your business almost $1 billion, and the lawsuits keep coming. So it costs you a lot of time. It's confusing a lot of people. It's making people are doing jail time because of the lying and all that. They will not accept the truth because it's against their feelings. It's against what they believe. It's, you know, they don't want certain things to happen. So they'll hold on to this lie, you know, in some kind of way. It's really kind of asinine because they'll hold on to this lie thinking that one day everybody's going to believe this particular thing. Like, the truth doesn't even matter. One day people are going to just come along this side and believe it and make this true. It's almost like they hold on to it so hard that they want to make it true so they don't have to deal with whether they feel like it's consequences or deal with the reality that this is what it is and you got to move on. They're holding on to this thing like for dear life, and I know why. We'll get into that maybe in other episodes, but how much that costs, not only physically, not only financially, but mentally, how you just hold on to a lie and how costly that could be instead of just dealing with it and say, you know what, we say it all the time, it is what it is, let me move on, let me grow, let me find out how I need to adjust to this. But no, I want to save my feelings. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to see this. I don't want to be a part of this. So I'm going to hold on to this lie as long as I can to make it the truth, to make it so real that other people go, you know what, I give up. Let's just go your way to save your feelings and to help you kind of move along in life. And that's not how adulthood works. You're going to have to face it one day. So why are you holding on to this, something that you're going to have to face one day? You're just buying time, and that time is running out. You know, you can hear TikTok. You know in your heart of hearts that's not true. But you're going to hold on to it until people kind of just say, you know what, I give up. Yeah, we'll go your way, you know, just to pacify you. It just doesn't work that way. But you have people who are, you know, they look like adults who hold on to that, you know, they say, you know, maybe you'll come around to believe the way I believe. Look at our history. And all this stuff is coming out about, you know, the true history, and you have a certain, you know, segment of this population saying, you know what, that didn't really happen because, you know, and if you're saying that happened, how are children going to feel when they, you know, we wrote this in certain books and now the truth comes out, you're hurting their feelings. What about the people that you oppressed and all that other stuff? They're still dealing with this. So, you know, we got to tell the truth at some particular point. You know, screw your feelings. It's not about your feelings. It's about the truth, and how do we help people deal with the truth so they can move on? So it's almost like if you don't deal with it, honesty is very important. If you don't deal with the honesty, how can you really kind of mature as an adult to say, you know, there's some things that are going to work in my favor. There's some things I believe that are not true. So I got to set the record straight. And, you know, it's not about my feelings. It's about what's right is right. And so it's very costly. But when you go to relationships, you know, to have to, you know, try to convince somebody that, hey, you know, you got to take accountability. This is not the truth. I know your perspective is, you know, to protect you or a defense mechanism to say, you know, I don't want to feel those certain feelings, but you got to get to it at a certain point. And so one thing that I would tell people, if, you know, you're trying to kind of dodge the truth, it's going to hit you at some particular time. So take it on face, you know, take it on head on right now, so you don't have to go through all the pain and feeling guilty and really trying to live up to this particular lie, because that takes a lot more energy, living up to a lie, than just facing the truth. It takes a lot more energy to try to keep the lie going, to try to remember what you lied about, all this other stuff. It takes a lot more energy. If you just tell the truth, you can just put your burdens down. I'm dealing with it. It's being dealt with. Let's move on. And people will forget, and they will move on. But you take so much energy, time, money, space. You look like a fool. You look crazy. You know, just trying not to be honest and taking so much energy and putting so much stress on yourself is just ridiculous. It's childish. If you think about, if you really kind of think about the bigger scheme of things, it's really childish to not be honest about certain things so people can go, okay, this is the situation. This is how we're going to deal with it. I find that when you do take things honestly, you know, you may not get the reaction that you think you're going to get. So you may think you're getting a negative reaction where you're honest with somebody. It's like, listen, this is how I feel. This is, you know, where it is right now. You know, maybe we should do such and such and such and such. And the other person will respond, you know what? I feel that same way too. You know, okay, good. Whew, relief. Now we can move on. Now we can say, you know, I don't have to be in a relationship I don't want to be in. Or I don't want to do the things that you're requiring in this relationship. Or living up to something that's not me or that I'm not capable of. Just being honest in that moment, you may get a reaction that is more positive, that you can just take a deep breath. You can relieve yourself of all that stress, and you can move on instead of just keeping up the facade of being dishonest to not only the other person, but not even honest with yourself. Because even if you get what you want, did you really get it honestly? Is the person really acting? Are you getting the true sense of that person? You're not. You're not. You're not getting the honest reaction, the truth, the 100% truth. But some people, and you know as well as I do, man, because you've been there before, they don't care about that. As long as they get what they want, screw honesty. Screw it. I get what I want anyway. I win. What you win, I don't know. But, you know, I win.
No, you're right, man. You're right, man. It's like, it's almost, you know, get what you want at any cost mentality. But I will say this, if you're rolling on untruth, you're rolling on an unstable foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That will kind of smash at any particular time. It just will, boss. I mean, at the end of the day, it will. It just kind of crumble. And I'm a firm believer that social media tells a lot of untruth, bro.
Not a lot of untruth.
I mean, people very up real. There are just basically, yeah, it's a lot of, and it's sad as people that we will believe, accept, and move on to untruth much quicker than the truth. It's just, if you think about it, we're almost programmed to think about, okay, I'd rather take a lie, even though I may feel like it's a lie, and believe it's the truth, and roll with it, that instead of dealing with the hardcore truth. And so you have people up there, in my opinion, on social media, telling things about themselves, where they live, who they are,
and lying every single day. And that's why you see them coming back, because a thing like you said earlier, when you tell an untruth or show an untruth, you must find a way to keep it going. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So they're gonna come back and they're gonna show you this and keep showing you this because they in their mind feel they gotta do and show you that they're being true, but they can't live up to that. There's no way possible that they can live up to that. So that's what kind of goes with that. I'm gonna move in this direction too, man, because this is the part I think men have to own, you know, in a sense, because as an adult we must check our ego. You know, we must keep our egos in check. I came across something this week, man, I'm going to jump into real quick. And it was, I was listening to Steve Harvey. He was on, with Shannon Sharp, Club Shay Shay, doing a video. And Steve Harvey was saying how when they were out there doing the Kings of Comedy, that things were going pretty good. And for the most part, he was always falling behind Bernie Mac. And so he went to Bernie Mac. He was like the end in the roster. He closed the show, and Bernie Mac was before him. Bernie Mac was second or third, but he kept falling back. So he went to Bernie Mac and said, you know, hey, man, I'd like to go on before you come on. Bernie Mac's like, no, I'm not changing. Now, in reality, he said that started the rift. Think about this for a second. That started the rift between him and Bernie Mac. But when you think about this, because you know you have done stand-up, Mr. DeMaurice, it's not Bernie Mac's place to determine which way he goes on. That's the promoter.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying after Bernie Mac came on, it was tough to follow. See, here's your ego. You're basically wanting to get ahead of him. And in my opinion, Bernie Mac at that time, and you know when they were doing their thing, Bernie Mac was the stand-up comedian of all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came down to as far as Steve and Bernie was killing it. Not knocking Steve's stand-up, but Bernie was killing it. So when we saw the movie versions, they made Steve the kind of the commentator. So he said shortly after the movie came out, you know, things got rocky, and that's when they all decided to go their separate ways. And he said what happened was ironic. What happened was a bunch of white comedians came on and decided they were going to do the same thing. And they started traveling, doing a movie, but they kept theirs going. Now, I would have to believe that they kept theirs going because they didn't allow their egos to get in the way. They checked their egos. And where Steve basically allowed his ego to get in the way, what's going on? You got four brothers doing something in comedy that's never been done before. Never. So you allow your petty ego to basically get in the way of what's going on. In reality, ego in that particular case was a lot of envy and a lot of jealousy because he was jealous of Bernie Mac. Yeah, Bernie Mac was killing. You know, maybe when you came over there and laugh at you as much, but at the end of the day, you were still picking up a damn good paycheck. And that's really the reason why you're out there. Not to beat Bernie Mac and be competitive. You was out there to be, earn a paycheck. So I give you that, and I say to you, you know, as men, I think we have to really understand that our egos, which rolls with pride, sometimes they go hand in hand together, needs to be checked when you're an adult. You know, you're a child and you're doing your thing, but when you become a man, you're going to stand up as a man. Our egos need to be checked, Mr. Reese. Your response?
Definitely, man, because there's a lot of history behind that. We don't have that much time. And, you know, if you look at Steve Harvey's life, man, he's been living a life for a long time. And he's been profiting off that. And you're right. He was jealous of Bernie Mac. And sometimes we have to check ourselves to only compete with ourselves, not with other brothers. I'm going to say that again. Your competition is yourself, not with other people. So be the best you can be. You know, there's going to be people more talented. There's going to be people more funny. It's not what you're competing against. You're competing against being your better self every day and being better. Instead of challenging himself and kind of saying, you know what, this guy's bringing the heat, so I need to step up my game, or I need to realize I'm not as funny as this guy, but I still have a segment of people who think I'm funny. And, you know, he went to that guy, that man, and said, hey, man, I want to do this. No. I'm not competing with you, so why are you competing with me? You know, and he tried to sabotage Bernie Mac in a lot of ways. because of that ego.
Sure.
But I'm not in competition with you or with Mr. Childs or with any other brother. I'm in competition with myself. I compete against myself. What can I do to be better tomorrow? What can I do to look at myself today and say, okay, these are some of the things I need to change to be better, not to compete with you or compete with another brother, but to be compete with me and say, how can I be better the next day and be the better version of myself and not lie to myself, be look in the mirror and be honest with myself and say, okay, what are things I need to work on? Or even having a mentor and say, what are some of the things I need to work on to be better? And I do that when I have my private lessons in martial arts with the head instructor. It's like, listen, I don't feel that I'm at my best. What do I need to do? And I'm competing against myself. I'm not saying, hey, what can I do so I can beat so-and-so? Or I can do this. What can I do to be better for myself so I feel more complete in this particular discipline that I'm studying? How do I get to the master's level with, like, you know, not competing with you, but how can I get to that level that I see you're at, and so that I can be better for myself, so I can be better for others? And so I don't think we look at that, you know, and take accountability of that, that we're not competing against each other. And that causes a lot of confusion, because if you got a better car or you got better clothes or you got, you know, now I'm mad and now I want to take you out because you're getting, the better women. And no, that causes a lot of confusion, a lot of unnecessary stress in your life. What can you do to be the best version of yourself? Because we're all different. We're all unique. Man, think about it, bro. We're miracles walking this planet, bro. Because,
sure,
you know, when our mom and dad got together and, you know, and all the sperm that gets to the egg, you're the one that got to the egg. You're the one. So we're walking miracles. Can you imagine the millions and millions of sperm that didn't make it? But we're sitting here as miracles. That means we're already special. We already won. We already won. And we're in competition with ourselves. We competed with the other sperm. We won. We're finished. That's mm-hmm. The competition is over. You're here. You're competing against yourself, not other people. You can cut out a lot of confusion, a lot of jealousy, a lot of stress if you just realize that I'm a walking miracle and that I only compete with myself. I don't compete with others. I can only be my best self. I may never be as rich as some of the folks that are out here on this planet, but I'm not in competition with them. I'm a walking miracle. I'm here. I'm here for a reason, and I got to serve my purpose. And my purpose is not to compete with other people to be better than them.
You know, it's interesting, man. As I watched, I realized he doesn't seem happy in his life. You think about all the stuff he's accomplished, he's done, he should be happy. He doesn't seem like it, bro. And
no,
that says to me,
living a lie.
Money,
living a lie.
Yeah, money is not necessarily your route to happiness. And people believe that. If I could drive this, I live this. And it goes, if you go back and just watch the videos, you'll see that's not a happy man. He doesn't come across. But I want to make a point. Even with that being said, with Shannon Sharp, and you said something earlier about when people are saying some things and support. Now, my point is this. If I saw that when Steve said that, Shannon Sharp, I probably saw it. But you're looking at who Steve is. You don't want to call him out and say, bro, you were wrong. And if we can't stop licking up to folks and kissing up to them and let them know, when sometimes when you're wrong, you need to hear it, bro. You handle that wrong. You could have done better. You could have done better, because just like I said, those brothers should still be killing out on the road. Because if you're selfish, you're non-checking ego, look what it's learned. So now, yeah, you benefited from it. You went on and did all these things. But at the end of the day, you're home and you're not what? You're not happy. Look how much money he has in the bank. He's talked about his health not being that good. Hello. So I say to you, a lot of times you got to keep things in mind, because we're looking at falsehoods, making them out to be things that that shouldn't basically bring us happiness. We think that there are. And I think sometimes as when the truth needs to be told, we need to do it based on, you know, who we are and even our friends. And like you said earlier, with us, we're not competing. Well, one thing I love about us, man, we can get together on this and off, and if one of us is out of whack a little bit, guess what? The other one's going to put us back in whack.
Yeah.
We're going to let the other one
That's
know.
That's what I love. That's
that,
what
know,
I love about us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We're going to basically say, you know what, bro, you know, yeah, I know you might be doing this, but this is something that you need to do. Man, I want to take the next 4 minutes we have here, man. I want to he's got a birthday coming up soon. He didn't make the show today, Mr. Charles. And I want to say happy birthday and salute that brother, man, because he deserves it, man. He's you know, you've known him much longer than I have, so I'm going to give you 2 minutes to go in. But I want to say this realistically, man. I love that cat. I respect him. Man, I crack up sometimes how you and him get together and gang up on me and try to beat me, say things, man. Oh, it does my heart so good, man, to know that. Have that type of impact. But here's a man that, man, I'll say from the beginning, what we've done here has showed up relentlessly, has given, open up, share, not been afraid to basically pour out. And there's been times I sat back and listened to him. I've learned things. I'm in awe. And I love who he is. I love who he represents. I'm happy that he's celebrating another year in life. I wish him nothing but the best and enjoy it. And continue on to live strong, my brother. And as I said, man, you cats go back, I'm going to say about, 20, 30 years? And I love the way you two get together and you know, do things, you know, talk and chit-chat. Oh, man, I mean, that's a brotherhood, man. That's how we should be. So we'll spend some time and give you some time to speak on one, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, man, he's always treated me like a little brother, and that's in a good sense. Because he was an upperclassman when I went to Wilberforce University, but always somebody you can go and talk to. He's going to give it to you real, and he's like I said, he's been that big brother figure, but more than that, a good friend, and I truly look at him as a brother, someone I can talk to. And I've accumulated a few of those over the years, but he's one of those guys where, you know, you ask him to do something. And, you know, he's Johnny on the spot, no matter what you ask him to do. And I just hope I've been a brother to him like he's been a brother to me, because there have been times where even after our sports show, we'll like do our sports show. And I always ask him, how you doing, man? How you doing? And, we'll go into those conversations, and always leaves me laughing, always put things in a perspective where, you know, he's going to give it to me straight, but it's going to be some humor to it where it's like it makes the medicine go down a little bit easier when it comes from him. And when you leave a conversation with him, you are feeling much more better or your confidence. He's like the ultimate. You remember Bodini Brown with Muhammad Ali?
Mm-hmm.
That's how Charles is to me. It's like, and I try to be that to him, you know, like, you know, who you think? You know, tell them who you are. You know, this is, you know, you're Don so-and-so, man. Come on, man. You know, you want to win? You want to win? Yeah, I want to win. Yeah, all right, let's go. So he's always been that to me. He's been, like, my biggest support at times. And I try to just be that to him, man, with his endeavors, with low points in his life, in our life. Just trying to be there and be that brother to him that he's been to me over the years. And this is a guy, you know, just met on the college campus, and we just vibed on sports and music. And it turned into not only a great friendship, but a brotherhood, man. And I'm glad that you and him met, because you've been that to me too. So, you know, it's great that, you know, you can align folks who are like minds, and we learn from each other. We share a lot with each other. And it's been a beautiful experience just watching you two and the brotherhood that you two have accomplished. Even though you two haven't met physically, you met through Zoom and on these shows, but to see the relationship blossom between you two also, it's a triad that is, you know, we pack a big punch when we're all together. We definitely do.
Yes, sir, man. I appreciate it, man. We're going to put the lid on this one this week. We'll get together next week. Mr. Charles, enjoy your birthday, man. Have some good fun, stay fun, of course. We love you, boss. We look forward to having you back next week. Mr. Reese, you stay black. I know you will. You've been that way for quite some time. We'll get together again real soon, man. It's from Black Man Talk. Y'all go easy.